You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So this is an interesting story with today's episode. It very much resonates with my idea behind this show. I want to share stories of choices and decisions and the way those things impact our lives in both expected and also unexpected ways. Many weeks ago, a person reached out to me and said, in writing, it wasn't over the phone, "I'm not sure if this would interest you, but I just finished writing a book about Kurt Cobain. Can I be on your podcast?" And I thought to myself, well, self, yes, actually, that is very much of interest to me. And one of my favorite things about hosting this show and hosting any show has always been the amazing and interesting people that I get to come into contact with as a part of that. But also this was of interest to me because it turns out, and you may or may not have guessed this about me already, that I am a Nirvana fan. I was lucky enough to see Nirvana live in 1992 when I was a student at the University of Kansas. My ticket was $12. $12 general entry. I was so broke that I didn't buy any merch at the show. I don't even remember if there was merch. I was broke enough that I didn't look to see if there was merch. Anyway, one of the dumb random factoids about me is that when I see somebody these days who's like 16 or 20 years old in 2025 who's wearing a Nirvana t-shirt, I'm tempted to go up to them and be like, "Hey, where's your album? Where's your concert ticket? Let me see your proof," which is really dumb because anybody can buy a t-shirt for a band. Those two things are not actually connected at all. The problem there is me. Hey, if it sounds like I'm stalling here, that's correct. I'm giving time for people who might just be a little bit of lurkers to drop off, and I'm doing that on purpose. The story today is about a person who had an idea to write a book and how the idea for the book actually changed dramatically during the process, and then how a person with no connections managed to create and publish a book about a very popular person and topic. But there's more. In between the time that I recorded this interview and now when you get to listen to it, the guest has begun to experience online backlash personally for this project. And they actually came to me and said, "Hey, I'm going back to everybody who I talked to and asking them if they would consider not publishing these interviews." And I did think about that. I thought about that, and then I decided to do something a little bit different. And the reason is that this is another part of the story that aligns with my purpose. Choices we make, the decisions we make, and the impact it has on our future life. The path of adulting is long, and we don't know how our decisions are going to impact us in the future. And so this is another part of the story that actually happened. So I have modified this episode to remove the specific mentions of who the guest is. And very specifically and directly, I'm asking anybody who is part of my audience, I think you're awesome because you're in my audience. I think you're amazing. And so I'm asking you, if you listen to this through me, don't be a jerk. Don't be a jerk. Be kind to my guest. So now, if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's do this. All right. So today, we're going to talk about how and why you decided to write a book. Does that sound good?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so excited about this. All right. So a lot of people want to write books,
yes,
according to Substack, which I don't know if that qualifies as an credible source, but let's go with it. 8 out of 10 adults want to write books.
Wow.
Have you always wanted to write a book?
No, it was never something I thought I would do in a million years. It wasn't really even something I was super interested in doing. More because I do love to write and I love creative writing, but I like short stories more. I never thought I would have the attention span to sit still for a book. I think it's awesome. And I've always had so much respect for people who do write books. I just didn't think I would ever be one of those people who could have that discipline to do it. And my book is 500 pages. So
it's,
I did it.
You did it. Absolutely. You did it. So I've been stalling a teeny tiny bit on purpose before we get into the heavier topic that we were going to do. And that's
Sure.
just because I want to give people a chance to not be sandbagged and slip into it at the start of the episode. This is not like a all of these things. But let's go ahead and share with the audience what are the events that because you are you didn't want to write a book, but what is the event in your life that motivated you to decide you did want to write a book?
Sure, absolutely. So I got married in 2017, and a month after my wedding, I used to be a school teacher before I became a mom. And it was, summer break, and I was home, and my husband was at work, and it was 12:30 in the afternoon, and he called me from his cell phone, which I thought was odd because he should have been in the office. And he called me, and he was, very upset, and he was letting me know that a family member of ours, Walter, had died by suicide. This was a very close family member. And that was it. That basically changed the trajectory of things for, our family. I got my wedding photos back, I want to say like 2 weeks later. And, the first picture is my husband and Walter walking up to the chapel together. The videographer sent us the video right away. And there's, Walter on the floor after catching the garter and, doing the worm. And it was a very difficult pill to swallow that somebody who had so much life and so much love to give and such a vibrancy, and who was really in so many ways, not in so many, he was just this charismatic, hysterical person. And to think that that was what he felt was his only option, because it wasn't. There was so many other, there's so many people there for him, and there were so many other ways he could have gotten help, but we just didn't know what he was going through. And my family, everybody handled it, the usual ways, whether it was, talk therapy. Some people went to support, groups and just connecting and talking, celebrating Walter. But years obviously went by. This was 2017. Fast forward to the pandemic, and we had moved, and everything's shut down. There's not much to do. We live in a pretty remote area as it is. And I'm outside one day, and I hear my neighbor's young son blasting Nirvana. And I
Okay.
wasn't a Nirvana fan, I'll be honest. I mean, I know some of their songs. Okay, now I'm a big fan. But I hear him outside blasting Nirvana, and I'm now I'm in my 40s, okay? And this is a 20-year-old, and I'm like, do you guys still listen to Nirvana? And he's like, oh God, yeah, we love Nirvana. So I go inside, and my little one and I were baking cookies, and I'm like, Alexa, play Smells Like Teen Spirit. So that tripped the algorithm for all things
Okay.
Nirvana and Kurt Cobain to start coming up on a newsfeed. So I'm sitting down one night, and everything that's coming up about Kurt Cobain, I felt was very depressed. A tortured guitar of a tortured artist, like all these just like very like maudlin. I felt the titles of a lot of these articles were like clickbait. So it's, 2 in the morning, and I'm on HBO because I can't sleep, and I'm watching, movies, and I see Kurt Cobain's Montage of Heck, Brett Morgan's Montage of Heck, and it's this rock doc. And I watched it, and I was completely blown away. And one of the things that stood out to me the most was the music in it. The music is a bunch of different Nirvana songs that are really reimagined, and it's just this incredible, powerful, soundtrack basically. So I reached out to Jeff Dana, who is the film composer, I'm sorry, the music composer for the film, and he did such an outstanding job that the book just kind of started coming from that. I
Okay.
was, well, for one, I was upset with, I think, the whole narrative surrounding Cobain, because I felt that with so many young people looking up to him, that we needed to do better. It was a very irresponsible narrative that this is this person who was depressed. And that was it. So I started reaching out to people who knew him and band members, and I said, "Hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to donate, half my profits to charity. We're going to celebrate Kurt in it. We're going to shine a light on mental health awareness." And I got an overwhelming, positive response from these people that knew him, worked with him, loved him. And it took a couple of years, but we sat down and we did it. And that's how I wrote a book.
Oh my gosh. All right. So I'm going to take you through, you sort of hit on all of my questions. So I'm going
Sorry.
to take you back through them. No, but that's good. That means that the questions that I have in my mind are the
Okay.
story, which is really good. The first thing I want to do is really take a second and acknowledge you for sharing the story of your family member.
Thank
You've
you.
probably over the process, you've probably had the opportunity to talk about it and share it several times, but that doesn't mean that it's not hard to do, and it doesn't mean that it's not important. And so, I do want to acknowledge you for doing that because it is a tough
Thank you.
situation and it's a tough thing to talk about. And one of the reasons I want to do that is exactly like you're talking, the way we tell these stories and the message behind it, I think is really important.
Thank you.
Because we can talk about things, hard things in a way that don't lift us up, but sometimes we can talk about things that are very, very hard in ways that validate and then support. And so I think that that's good. I want to say thank you. I want to acknowledge your courage.
Thank you.
My first question that I had when, so
Sure.
to be clear, she reached out to me and she was like, "Do you want to talk about my very cool experience in writing this book about Kurt Cobain?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, I do." And then I knew that there was a family connection, but I didn't know anything about the family connection. So my very first question was, "Well, hello, are you related? Like, is there a connection?" But what it sounds like you said is you're not related to Kurt Cobain, or
No,
okay.
no.
So you just saw this experience. You had this experience with a neighbor enjoying the band. You went down a
Couldn't prove.
rabbit hole
Yeah.
and said, 500 pages, here we come.
Yeah, with absolutely no industry connections. I don't have a degree in journalism. I went to school for special education. I worked with, before leaving to be a full-time mom. I worked with at-risk children. So I saw a lot of disadvantaged children battling, they were unhoused. So I saw a lot when I was working in the school systems. And like I said, I have no industry contacts. I'm on the other side of the country from Seattle. I don't know anybody out there. I literally watched Montage of Heck, emailed Jeff Dana, who did the music for it, was like, "This is incredible. I'm going to write a book. Jeff's in my book. He's phenomenal." Jeff has done such incredible music for so many different movies and TV shows. He's phenomenal. And what I love about Jeff too is that being a composer, he was able to sit down and say Kurt Cobain was extremely talented, and here's why. And that's like one of my favorite chapters in the entire book. But to me, like I said, having no industry experience, having no contacts out there, the fact that all these people that loved and knew Kurt Cobain helped me do this for suicide awareness to honor Walter, I will never be able to thank the people in my book. Just there's no way to thank them for doing this. So,
So there's some you deserve a lot of praise here
oh,
as we
thank you.
go. I want to take you back to that time
Sure.
when you're watching the documentary, and you think to yourself, like, just take me back to that spot
Sure.
where you're like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reach out to this stranger. Because one of the focuses of the podcast is, and the story, it's like the choices we make and how they impact the path of our life. Because you could have just watched that and been like, wow, cool, let's go eat some popcorn. But you were like, hey, let me, I mean, how, like, what, how, do you remember what you were thinking and how it happened?
It was weird. Remember, it was really late at night and I was in bed and I was watching this movie. And it's a super interesting movie if you've never seen it. It's really cool how it's filmed. And at the very end, they don't really touch on Kurt's passing or anything. They just kind of, he died by suicide. And I'm in bed and I'm crying. And I'm like, what did I just watch? And I don't feel like there's that many movies that affect me to that level where, you're feeling all these things. It was just so, I think, perfectly executed. So, but it was the soundtrack. It was a soundtrack because for me, music puts me in a certain zone when I'm writing, because I do, even though this is my first book, I do write for a bunch of online publications, and music is what puts me in the zone. So I went down that rabbit hole and I found Jeff's website, and he's got the sizzle reel, for the movie on it, and it's got the music on it. And I'm like, oh my God, I love this. So I sent him an email and I'm like, do you have, a CD or anything with this? He's like, no, I don't, but I have a YouTube channel, And I was like, I think I'm going to write a book, Jeff. And I told him, I was, he's like, he was filming the music for, I think it was HBO's Julia at the time. So he was slammed, and he was like, circle back in a couple months and see what we can do. So I think it was, may have been like that week. I review albums for one publication, and I'm, reviewing this new artist, and I'm on the phone with him, and I'm asking questions, and I'm like, tell me about some of your influences. And he's like, well, Kurt Cobain. And he's telling me how Kurt Cobain pulled him out of a dark spot. And I'm like, yeah, I definitely do need to write this book. And that was when I kind of started to get the idea for where I was going to go with the book. I wanted to bring a lot of indie artists in
Okay.
because, look, it's been 30 years, since Kurt passed away. And I think a lot of these people have already done interviews, but his music still affects up and coming artists. And that was, that same week talking to an indie musician, I was like, I think part of the book needs to focus on indie artists and how Kurt Cobain's impact has 30 years later, people are becoming musicians because of him. And, but not even that. 30 years later, his music has pulled people out of, substance abuse, or, it's helped people through these really harrowing, life challenges. And it was, like I said, all these kind of little conversations. It was weird because I didn't have a clear definition of what I wanted to do with this book. But the more I talked to people, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And now the book has five sections, and it's just this, it was this big weird project that took 2 years. And it felt haphazard because it was, and it was meant to be like that because I think his whole life and career was kind of haphazard, and I didn't want it to be clean and polished and neat. And it's just, it was just strange. Like I said, it was watching this movie, and it was like this light bulb. I was like, I'm gonna write a book
I
because
love that. I love it. So
thank
you
you.
do write other things.
Yeah.
You're a teacher, you've got like a background in that. Writing a book is different than writing an article for sure.
Yeah.
And so did you have an idea of how to write a book, or did you, we're veering a little bit off the topic, but like, because I know a lot of people are curious about how to write a book. Like, how did you bridge that gap of, album review, indie artist review, teacher to 500 page book? Did you do it through like, the Google search and YouTube like most of us do, or how did you
No,
figure it out?
not at all. So the book was actually meant to be something different. I was originally working on kind of this like Nirvana fan fiction book. And then I
Oh,
had,
I love this.
yes, I actually have that
I
book. It's
love
half
this.
done.
Okay.
It's half done. And some people are like, are you going to finish it and put it out? I'm like, I don't know. But it was, I think it was October, and some of my friends who were writers and authors were like, we're gonna go do Nano. And they're like, I was like, what is Nano? They're like, we write a
Okay.
book in a month. And I was like, really? They're like, no, it's really hard. It's really hard. Don't do it to yourself. And in my head, I'm like, challenge accepted. So I go and I join this thing, and I get
Well, let's
like,
pause and tell people what that is
sure.
so that they don't know. So this is like a, it's a month, right?
It's a month where you're supposed to push yourself to write a book.
Push yourself, and it's abbreviated to that word, but you can look it up and you sign up and
Yeah.
you're part of a thing. But it's really self-guided because you
It
can sign
is.
up
It's,
and not do it. Like a couple
you
years
can
ago,
be,
I signed up and was
yes.
like, oh no, not writing a book,
You
totally
can
ignoring all of
completely
these
abandon
messages. Yes.
cart with it. Yep, you
Yes,
can
that's
do
exactly what I did. That's
it.
what I did. I was like, no,
That's
I
all you
don't have
can do.
any, like, this is not my time. So, but you signed up and you were like, go for it.
Yeah, because you know what's really cool about the program is it like shames you if you have the push notifications,
Yeah.
and it's like, did you write today? As I'm sitting there with like, a Twix bar in one hand and a Snickers in the other, like watching Love is Blind. I'm like, no, I didn't. So it kind of like keeps you on track. So I started doing that, and then I don't know, I just really, I got like into that book. So I have a friend of mine. We used to work together for an SEO firm. I still work there. He left. He actually is a writing coach now. And I was like, you want to work together? I was like, and help me like maybe finish this book, like coach me. And he did. And what I would do is I would write some chapters, and then he would read them, and then we would work together. And he would be like, okay, this is how you do dialogue, or this is how you segue from, So now keep in mind, I've been writing for like 3 months at this point, not like article writing, like book type of writing. So one day I'm like, I'm gonna pitch a literary agent because why not? So I pitch a literary agent. This is like my first, but I got very lucky with this, I will say that. This was like my first literary agent that I pitched in New York. And I read that when you query them, you're supposed to have a backup book idea. So I told him about the book that I was working on. And I said, but I did have this light bulb about a different book about Kurt Cobain. And he emails me and he's like, let's have a meeting. And I'm so
Oh, you are kidding.
no, but you know where my mind went? I was like, no, this guy's going to try to sell me a timeshare. Like, no way does he.
Right. No, you like, 'cause that's a whole thing in the book publishing thing, the indie publisher houses that are like, sure, pay us, $3,000 to $10,000 and we'll help you write a book, right? That's a whole business.
Totally legit
No,
agent.
totally legit. Not to throw you like not to like we I you were the conversation at my dinner table with my family last night. I like to have an 18-year-old that still lives at home, and I was like, I get to talk to this person who wrote this amazing book that comes out in February.
Thank you.
And my 18-year-old looked it up and he was like, this is a big deal, Mom. Genius is the name in music. And I was like, oh, well, maybe it's some other thing. And he's like, no, this is it. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, that is really, truly awesome. That is really, truly awesome. All right. So you
Thank you.
mentioned that you were not actually a Nirvana fan back in the day. You're a little young, right?
I'll be 42 this year.
All right. So I'm 51. I'm
Okay, so I
51.
was
I
10
too.
when Kurt died, and I remember where I was like when I heard that news because I was my mom didn't want me, home alone after school, and I remember being at the
Yeah.
lady's house across the street who would watch us until our parents got home, and I just remember her son who was in his 20s who was a big country music fan. Came in and he looked like visibly upset. And there's like a bunch of like little kids looking at him. And he goes, Kurt Cobain died. And
Yeah.
he died by suicide. And I didn't know who he was, but I remember knowing that was like a big thing. Like I knew who Nirvana was. But I mean, growing up, my mom, like, you can listen to Rod Stewart, which I was happy with. It was my first concert.
So I know
But
this interview is all about you, but this is my ticket stub from seeing
that's awesome.
Nirvana, October 17th, 1991. My ticket price
Wow.
is $7. $7. This was
The
at the
one time I
student
wish I had a
union.
DeLorean.
Yeah, this was at the student union at school. At
Wow.
like school, and they had not hit it big yet. I was so broke that that's my only memento is this
Wow.
ticket. I don't have a shirt, I don't have anything.
That's
And it
awesome,
was
though.
in I randomly, I'm not a pack rabbit, but like I'm not somebody who saves things, but I do have this. I have it with all of the it's like the scrapbook page from like the
That's
shows I saw
cool.
my first year of college. The other side is like sorority pictures, which is really funny. So anyway,
That's neat.
I pulled it out and I showed. So anyway, I want to thank you for giving me some street cred with my kids, because they see me as mom and I really appreciate it. But yeah, it was a big deal. It was a really, really shocking moment. And it threw like those of us, the way it does, it's not unique to Nirvana or to Kurt Cobain, but when you have somebody who you have like a, we call them parasocial relationships right now, like when you're fans, right? So you grieve people you didn't even know, right? And so then you were doing this partially as a part of your journey for grieving a family member. Was writing the book at all connected to the grieving process, or was it totally separate for you?
No, it was all connected. I think the way I describe it sounds haphazard. So basically, I come home, I hear the kid playing the music, Kurt Cobain starts popping up in my news feed. It's irritating me how it sounds like a very depressed narrative because I would not want, if it had Walter been famous, I would not want the media to remember him
Yeah.
that way. This is all on my mind. I go and I watch Montage of Heck. I connect with Jeff Dana from Montage of Heck. It's Nano. Now I'm writing this fan fiction book about, Kurt Cobain, but still in the back of my mind, I want to do this book that celebrates him. I reach out to the agent. We have a meeting. He signs me that day. And he says to me, stop the fan fiction book. Only focus on the nonfiction. We're not calling, it's not a biography. We're calling it a celebration of life. He's like, focus on that one. And that was it. I mean, and it was just 2 years of connecting with people from Seattle. I think one of the first interviews I did was with Gary Lee Conner from the Screaming Trees.
Okay.
He's a phenomenal human being. He really is wonderful, and in a lot of ways, I think he helped me really kick this whole thing off because he was like, okay, here's who you need to go talk to next. And then that was this one and this one, and next thing I know, I'm on the phone with Danny Goldberg, who was Nirvana's manager. And like, I went from knowing nothing about Kurt Cobain to now some of his friends are people I consider very dear friends to me. It's weird because I never met him, but I feel like I knew him and I have so much respect for him. But learning about Kurt's, suicide, firsthand encounters with his friends, and people who knew him, it was a difficult process. There was a lot of crying. It was hard for everybody involved. I'll give you an example. One interview with somebody in the book was 12 hours and took 3 days. And it was tough. And he said to me, he said, and he didn't mean this like in any kind of like a bad way. He said, talking to you, he's like, this forces me to relive my friend's suicide. He said, and I know you're reliving it too. So I think I have this kind of, I have this relationship that I have now with a lot of the people in the book. A lot of us keep in touch because, we have that shared commonality. And a big theme shared among, the people in the book, they said, we're doing this because of what you told us about Walter. Because at first I wasn't sure if I should include Walter in the book or not. And somebody in the industry had read the book, the publishing industry had read the book and was like, because I did have Walter in it at first, just in like the intro, get that out. Nobody cares about you. Nobody cares about your life. A lot of nastinesses coming out. And basically what happened was I was on the phone. I think it was Charles Peterson, who's, really well known, legendary Nirvana photographer. He's awesome. And he said to me, no, include Walter in the book. This is why, we're doing this. He's like, absolutely 100% include him. And I got off the phone with Charles and I went back and I revamped the book and Walter's in it from start to finish now. I mean, the book is about Kurt, but it's also about my journey. I have not read a book about Kurt Cobain or Nirvana. Like I said, I wasn't part of that scene. So this book is my journey to understand more about suicide, suicide awareness, suicide prevention, mental health, how to celebrate people despite, their last moments not defining somebody. And then that's basically how it was from start to finish. So it was tough. I found myself in a suicide survivor support group at one point. It's very hard to, really immerse yourself in suicide culture for 2 years. And I think if you can do it without having experienced a suicide, maybe you can be a little bit more numb to it. But for me, every single interview, the people asked me, why are you writing this? So it was Walter's story basically on repeat. But I don't want his life or his death to have been in vain. I want people to know who he was, that he mattered. I do have a whole section at the end of the book that is just mental health resources. Because there is always somebody out there who cares. You know what I mean? There's always somebody out there. Even some of Kurt's friends in the book said that too. If he could have just gotten a little more help, stopped, relaxed, you know what I mean? He would stay. A lot of people do feel he would still be here today. That this, and that's a big thing in my book too, that his death was not Kurt's death, and Walter's death was not inevitable. I think a lot of media sources and outlets like to paint Kurt is destined to join the 27 Club.
They make it very dramatic and very
It is.
sexy.
I don't subscribe to that. I think it's gross romanticism, it's sensationalism. And to people who've, lost family members or friends to suicide, it's just, nah. That was a big, I think Walter and reading a lot of these tabloid stories about Kurt was really the impetus for why I felt I wanted to write something, to remind people that there's always hope. And then to use, a big chunk of the money from the book to be like, and let's go do something good and honor these men and people we've lost. Let's go do something good. Let's give back.
You touched on a lot of really important things there. One is the really uncomfortable reality that even though we're very, very curious and the stories are very, very captivating, when we ask people to talk about the things that they have experienced, it requires that they relive those moments. And one of the things that I say to people and try and teach the people who are around me is that somebody else's suffering and somebody else's experience is not my entertainment. That's not what it is, right? I just don't want to see it that way, right? And so being very judicious and curating the way we speak about these things in a way that frames them in something that is hopefully helpful and supportive. And the other thing you talked about, which is a real challenge, and I don't have a solution about this, is that in moments where we really, really, in moments of crisis where we need support and help, we're not aware and we don't know where they are. And it's like this crazy thing that, we're, even to use a very mundane example, right? When you're lost and you need directions, you don't know where you are or who
Well,
to
it's like you've been in
ask,
the car with me, but yeah.
right?
And my
Exactly.
husband doesn't let me drive that much. I'll end
Right.
up in Guam somehow. But yeah.
Yeah. And so then we have this combination of things. It's like the information needs to be available and, where people need it. But it is this crazy thing where the person who needs support doesn't know how to get it, and the people who can give it don't actually know that anybody needs it or know who needs it, right? It's this really, really delicate, challenging situation. And it's not that there isn't a solution. I don't have a solution, but, it's kind of like this is the solution, talking about these things in
Yeah.
ways and, doing the best we can and all these things. So I am so unbelievably impressed by you as an individual, that you reached
Thank
out to
you.
these people, to the friends, to the management, to the sound engineers, people you didn't know about things you didn't know. Like, seriously, you are a brave person. Like, what? I consider myself fearless to talk to strangers, but I mean, this
I'm
is
not.
impressive.
I'm actually very, very introverted. this pushed me. I want to touch on something you just said. You're making me think when you were saying that, when people don't know, always know how to get help. Walter had so many wonderful, loving, and I'm not just saying like me, but I mean the people that Walter lived with. He had so many wonderful, loving people around him and beautiful friends and family. But sometimes you just don't know what people are
You just
thinking.
don't know. Yeah.
Walter was a veteran Marine, though, so he did see some stuff when he was overseas. And that also, I think, plays a big role. I do feel very fortunate in the book. So Jason Everman, for a while, was Nirvana's second guitarist, and he does a lot of charity work. We could not connect. We did want to talk. We couldn't actually make it happen. So I talked to he's in a band, Jason Everman. They're called Silence and Light. And I spoke to a band member of his. They are an incredible band. They are all, veterans from the military, and but their whole platform for their band is awesome. So I was able to bring in someone, Brad Thomas from Jason Everman's band. He's awesome, and he was able to talk, about the music industry and, mental health and what, servicemen and women go through too. So I got lucky with the people in the book that people were really. It was awesome. People really came together to talk about what matters, I think.
I think it's very, very cool. Now, to the totally awkward segue, what did your family say when you were like, "Hey, I'm going to write a book"? First of all, I'm going to ask this question twice. I didn't realize I had two versions of this question. But when you said, "I'm going to write a fan fiction book," what was the reaction? And then when it turned into a nonfiction book about a super, super famous rock star, what did they say?
I only told my husband at first, and my husband is my biggest supporter. I love him more than anything, and I feel bad for him because I was like, I wrote a chapter, want to hear it? Okay, so I'd read him the chapter and be like, I reread the chapter, want to hear it again? Yeah, okay, let's go. I have wrote three more chapters, 15 more times on here. Yeah, sure, let's do it. And then I was like, I'm going to pitch an agent. Go ahead, you're a fantastic writer. Go ahead, do it. When agent signed me, of course they did. They'd be stupid not to. Like he's just, I struck gold. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My little one's too little to really care too much. But mommy, you're the best. Mommy, you're doing a great job. Mommy, we love you. So then when I told my husband, I was like, well, my agent wants me to take this in a different direction. And I want to tell. Aspiring authors, I'm unagented. So, if I can just tell that real quick to anybody,
Yeah.
what happened was my agent sent it to a baker's dozen and he went after like the big four and their imprints. And some of the feedback I got was she doesn't have an author platform now. No, we can't sell books about grunge. Is Kurt Cobain really still relevant? Like, I got that kind of feedback. And the last correspondence we got was from one of the big four, and it was normally we would say yes, but we already have a similar title coming out. And I told my agent at that point, I was like, you know what? I was like, I appreciate everything you've done. I said, I think I'm going to self-publish this book and just do it on my own. So we went our separate ways, and some more time went by, and the book just kept growing.
Yeah. It really does sound like this was almost something that like snowballed because it was like, because when you get a good idea and when you have a good concept, it can get momentum on its own. And that
That's
is
what happened.
when you tell this, that's what I hear. It's like you had an idea and somebody else was like, yeah, let's do that. And then,
That's what happened after I went separate ways, like parted ways with my agent. It turned into, it was not the book that he pitched anymore. And I connected with an editor friend of mine and a publisher, and they don't do books like this. And I was like, give me some tips, give me some tricks. She was like, gotta change the name. And da-da-da. And she just gave me some pointers, and she said, go at it unagented. She was like, so many presses are getting away from agents, and especially with me wanting to give, half my profits away, an agent would have taken a big cut. And I just kind of zoned in on a few indie presses that I liked. A few were interested. One, had expressed a lot of interest to pretty big press expressed interest, but I'm with Genius Book Publishing because Genius is incredible. They knew that this was a passion project. They didn't make me change anything. They are very big advocates for mental health. That's it. They don't tamper with, anybody's work. You do what you need to put out there. I had spoken to some of their authors who left really big publishers for them, and they were like, if you can get in with Genius, get in with Genius. The amount of marketing that they're prepping to put into this book for me to help me get the word out there about Walter, about Kurt, for suicide awareness. These people have become like a second family to me. So I really, and you go on like Reddit and you hear like horror stories about publishers. Yeah, and I'm like, not mine. I wish they were
I've never
closer to
heard a
me, you know?
story like this about a publisher in 10
Nah.
years. Like, yeah,
They're
no,
wonderful.
this is fantastic.
They're
This is
wonderful.
fantastic. All right,
Yeah.
so very good. I love all about this and I could talk to you all day long, but in a minute we're gonna do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to really give the information. I'm gonna include this in the show notes and the
Sure.
information that goes out in the email, but tell people the title of the book, tell people where they can find it, when it comes
Sure.
out, and where they can buy it, because they should.
Absolutely. Sure. So it's called Kurt Cobain, Forever in Bloom. My husband named it.
Nice job. I love it.
I love that too. I really do. Currently, it's available for pre-sale with Genius Book Publishing. Sometimes, if you type in Genius Music Books, because they have a music subdivision, it'll come up for that too. With that too, on February 20th, Kurt Cobain's birthday, it'll be on Amazon. There's two versions of the book. Each version has a different cover. There's a paperback that has a picture from the photographer Gilbert Blecken. I love him. He gave me the photo, shared a story about his time with Kurt. There's a special edition hardcover. That one's bigger, and that actually has a brand new picture of Kurt on it. For anybody who is nerdy like me and follows this kind of stuff, the legendary, Woodstock photographer Henry Diltz photographed Nirvana at their last LA show at the Forum on December 30th, 1993. He had, I think, 36 or 37 pictures on the roll. Only one picture was in circulation at the Morrison Hotel Gallery. Henry gave me this brand new photo that's on our black cover. Let's see. It's did I say it'll be out on Amazon? Oh, the
You
charity.
say, yep, you say it'll be out on Amazon, two versions,
The
Kurt
second
Cobain,
version.
Forever in Bloom,
Yep.
and tell us, and a big point of this is the
The
charitable
charities.
element. So
Yes.
tell us where, how, like, so anybody who buys it anywhere, it makes money for the charity, or does it matter where they buy
Anybody
it? Okay,
anywhere.
anybody anywhere, and tell us about the charity.
Yeah, sure. Oh, if anybody wants the black one though with the Henry Diltz photo, that's only going to be on my publisher's website. But
You could have seen the gears like in my mind. I was like, okay, order that one.
that one's on my publisher's website. So basically, since it's not out yet, I did as a show of good faith, like if anybody wants to, follow me on Facebook, I put the receipt up and stuff. But last summer, I hosted a virtual writing workshop for authors who want to do what I'm doing. And we gave 100% of the profits from that to Camp Victory in Cobain's hometown. They offer free summer camp for children who have been sexually abused. They do phenomenal work. They are wonderful out there. So basically, what I'm doing is I'm giving 50% of my profits to charity. And I'll post this on my socials as I do it. But one of the charities is Camp Victory in Cobain's hometown of Aberdeen, like I said. Some money is going to the Aberdeen Food Pantry. Some money is going to the Grays Harbor Conservation District. They preserve and maintain Kurtz Memorial Park in Aberdeen, and they're going to continue to do that. Some money I'm giving to Wildlife Rescue because I love animals. I'm giving some money to suicide awareness and prevention. I want to find something for wounded veterans, but if anybody has any ideas on that, I'm looking for
I
something.
have a friend in San Francisco I'll connect you with
If
who
you don't mind,
does.
thank you.
Yeah, he does. He's so yeah, we'll do that offline. But when
Because
you were
it's.
telling the story, I was thinking of this person I know. So.
Well, and I'm also giving some money to. So when I joined the suicide survivors group and a support group, I was only able to go to one meeting because it was very depressing, obviously. But the woman who runs it, her son did die by suicide, and she started. And as a mom, this really got me. But she started a scholarship in her son's name, so I'm going to give some money there too. I have a big book launch party coming up in New Jersey. We have some bands coming to play, music. We're selling tickets and we're giving 100% of the profits from that day to Ginny's House, which is a children's advocacy center. So they work with, abused children. I'm giving some money to TCF, Tomorrow's Children's Fund. So they provide support to families of children who are battling childhood cancer. And then my last charity that I really love and means a lot to me is Letters Charity. So, to anybody who's a Steve Albini fan, Steve Albini was incredible. He is in my book. It was one of his final interviews. I spoke with him on the 30th anniversary of Kurt's passing, and then about a month later, Steve passed away. So, I really wanted to do something for Steve. So, I was talking to Todd Trainer, who's the drummer for his band Shellac, and he said, "What about Letters Charity?" So, that was started by Steve's wife Heather and championed by Steve. And what they basically do is, people write letters to Santa. My family really needs this, we really do that. And they make a Christmas happen for them and they give them, they help them financially, no strings attached. Just beautiful work that they do. Steve was one of these people that didn't hesitate to be part of my project. This is my way of, thanking him for his participation in this. I think that's all the charities. They're on my
That's a
website.
lot. That's a lot. All right, so we need to sell lots and lots of books to make
I
lots of
hope so.
money for these charities, and we're going to do that. All right, I'm happy to be a part of
Thank
that for
you.
sure. All right, we're going to close up. I'm going to ask you
Yes.
three totally unrelated
Okay.
questions. These are supposed to be rapid fire, like answer in just a little bit, but neither you or I is brief in any way, shape, or form. So we'll see how this
I'm
goes.
gracious. I know that.
Me
Okay.
too. It has never worked once. Not in one single interview has it been brief for any. Well, that's not true. A
Yeah.
couple of people are, but they're just for fun. All right. So anyway,
Okay.
what is the last thing that you bought for yourself, just for yourself, for pleasure or joy?
Does food count?
It could, if that's the thing. If you were like, this is a special thing, sure, whatever comes to mind.
That's what I do. Usually, I think my husband was teasing me because he was like, "What do you want to do? The book is out." I was like, "I want to order cookies for myself." He's like, "Cookies? Seriously?" I was like, "You've met me, right?" Yeah, so probably cookies. My one sister-in-law has a bakery from home, Treat Yourself Baker. She's phenomenal what she makes. And every so often I treat myself to her cookies.
That's amazing. All right,
I'm food
very good.
motivated. Yeah.
It works. It totally works. All right, so I'm cheating here a little tiny bit on this one because it is related to music, and I said that I wasn't going to do it based on the interview. But how do you, Kelly, listen to your favorite music these days? Do you listen like by, Apple, Spotify, old school
I'm old
radio?
school. I'm old school CDs in the car.
Old school CDs in the car.
That's me. That's me. Old
Oh.
school CDs. Sometimes Alexa, like I love to cook and bake. We're like, watch the Great British Bake Off. Let's go see what we can make now. Never comes out the same.
No.
So I listen to Alexa in the kitchen, but usually it's old school CDs in the car. I have my
That is
whole like
amazing.
that like CD case, like
Yeah, I don't have
circa
mine
like high
anymore.
school. I do.
Yeah.
even have cassettes in it.
No, I got rid of I got rid of the cassettes. I got rid of the CDs. One of my kids bought we bought new turntable, but now it's like it connects things
No, I'm
in
gonna throw
different
that.
ways. And I had to rebuy like albums. It was such a painful experience because they're very expensive now.
Oh,
So I
yeah.
was like buying like these albums. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I had this. I have to buy it again.
No, I'm a total
But
throwback.
yeah.
Yeah.
I totally, I thought that was, I thought that there was a chance that you could be that. We have one very, very old vintage like iPod that still has like 3,000 songs, and we have the old charger, and that's our one like
I
relic
do
of,
too.
yeah, that's
I
our
do
one
too.
like, what's our one like relic that we still have, but everything
I
else
do
I've totally
too.
upgraded to streaming services. All right. Last question, third and final. Do you have a favorite movie theater snack food? Like, so this, when you're in the theater, what you choose as your snack when you're watching a movie.
Reese's Pieces. I'm all about like the Reese's Pieces and but the peanut butter cups, like the people next to you will like hate you if you're that person, like unwrapping them all meticulous. You know what I mean? Doing this in between the Reese's Pieces. Yeah. Plus in the box, it's more like box to mouth ratio. So that's me. I
Yeah,
guess then I'm
no,
food
absolutely.
motivated.
No, well, so movie snacks say a lot about people. They say a lot about somebody's personality, what they choose. So that's what I thought it might be a fun question. That's it.
Thank you so much for this. It means a lot to me that you're helping me get the word out about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.